Brother Lavelle. Appreciate that. The message today, I thought I would talk about something that all of us have experienced, I believe. And it has made a difference in our lives, I believe. Love. Love makes the difference. Also, do you realize that it is almost dangerous to be unlike other people? To stand out? The world rewards conformity and punishes those who dare to be different. There once was a Christian college whose motto was distinctively different. I believe that's a fine description of the Christian, because God calls us to stand out, to be different. People said that Jesus was beside himself. And Festus told Paul that his great learning was driving him insane. Of course, in Paul's case, he did nothing more than just say that Jesus had risen from the dead. And for that, they called him a madman. We also can see the same principle at work there when Mary broke that expensive box of ointment and poured it on Jesus' feet. There in John chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. Of course, Judas, disgusted by this gesture, said that the ointment could have been sold for 300 denarii, which possibly could be up to like $45,000, and given to the poor. What he was looking at was, what a waste, just pouring that out. Judas hated what Mary did, but Jesus loved it. Love has its reasons, and those reasons rarely make sense to others. For some reason, I just had to think of talking about husband and wife again sometimes. Thinking about somebody else and how they love their wife, but there's no way I would have any love for that, you know. But love has its reasons. So how do you explain yourself to those who question your motives? In Mary's case, she let her actions speak for herself. She never answered Judas. Silence often has been the best policy when we are criticized. But that's not always what we do, is it? When we get backed into a corner or something like that, some of us just let her fly. But sometimes we must give an answer. And then we come across the conundrum posed by in Proverbs 26, verses 5, 4, and 5. There he says, "Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him." Then verse 5 says, "Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit." Sort of gives the two opposites right there. There are times when we should walk away from our critics, and there are times when we must give an answer. We need the Holy Spirit, and of course, a lot of times, wise counsel also from our friends, brothers and sisters, to know which is which in that. Paul evidently had had enough. He answered his critics because of the impact that he had on his ministry. And that gives us a bigger picture of this section. We could look at it another way. These two verses pierce the heart of our Christian witness. They explain why we aren't everything, why we aren't like everyone else. We totally march to a different drummer. We follow a different leader, and we live by different standards. And then going to 2 Corinthians chapter 5, I'd like to talk on two of these verses in here. Chapter 5, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 14 and 15. And verse 14, the first part of verse 14 says, "For the love of Christ constraineth us." When critics attack, it can be hard to maintain your composure. You'll find out who you are when others attack your character. And of course, in the heat of the battle, it's not always a pleasant discovery. Sometimes we discover too late what we did, and we have to go back and apologize, make things right. What motivates you? Fear of punishment often works. That's why burglars tend to skip homes with visible cameras. That's why you see yard signs that say this home is protected by ATT or some other security system. That appeals to our desire to stay out of jail. If those are there, the fear of punishment, they will leave those things alone. We do good because we dare not do evil. You might call this the virtue of compulsion. It makes the thief honest and the slanderer silent. It may keep a murderer from pulling the trigger. So laws protect us from lawless behavior. But fear is not enough. That's why Paul said that the love of Christ constrains or compels me. It could be Christ's love for us or our love for Christ, but I believe Paul here is thinking of Christ's love for us. We love God because he first loved us. Everything starts with God and comes down to us. Anything that depends solely on us will be weak and feeble and uncertain. We have nothing of ourselves. Our love waxes and wanes and grows hot and then fades away. We are nothing of ourselves. When Alexander McLaren preached on this particular text, he used several phrases to describe the impact of Christ's love on the human heart. He said it is unturned away by unworthiness. It is constant. It stays there. It's unturned away by unworthiness. Even if we feel like we are not worth anything at all, that does not turn God's love away. It is unrepelled by non-responsiveness. God's long-suffering, persistence, patience is always there, even when we don't respond. Undisgusted by any sin and unwearied by any opposition, God doesn't give up. God is always there for us. It's the light of heaven piercing the darkness of earth. And if we could just let that love get a hold of our hearts, our lives will never be the same. Have you ever heard of George Matheson? Probably very few people have heard of him. He was a brilliant Scottish pastor who became one of Scotland's greatest preachers in the late 1800s. As a young man, he received the news that he was going to go blind and that there was nothing that they could do about it. His fiancée ended their engagement because she couldn't face going through life married to a blind man. That just doesn't seem quite right, does it? Love was not real deep in there. His sister volunteered to assist him in his ministry, and she did so for many years. But eventually, she also fell in love and got married. And on the day that she was married, George Matheson felt a great agony of soul as he faced the prospect of being by himself for the rest of his life. Facing his grief, he wrote a hymn that remains popular to this day. He said the words came to him in just 5 minutes that he wrote this hymn. I'm not totally familiar with the song. I know of it, I think. But the first verse there says, O love that will not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thine ocean's depths its flow may richer, fuller be. That's what Paul meant when he said the love of Christ constrains or compels us. It's a love that will not let us go. It's got a hold of us. It's in our heart. Christ's love will motivate us. These problems that we were talking about between husband and wife and things, Christ's love will help us to work those things out so that they don't turn into pet peeves anymore. They will diminish. They might still be there as far as our flesh, but they will not bother us nearly. They will not be as big an offense to us if we allow the love of Christ to compel us to love our partners as he wants us to. If you live long enough, you'll encounter finical people and broken promises. Your love will go unrequited. That's why we need the love of Christ. His love is not finical because it comes from God, and God does not change. God's love is constant. That love welcomes every weary soul. It endures through the worst disappointments in life. I think all of us have faced some disappointments, some possibly more than others, depending on how we categorize disappointments. But if we have the love of Christ within, we know that life is all about serving him, and that will pull us through all these disappointments. Going back to verse 14 there, the last part of that, he says, the whole verse there, for the love of Christ constraineth us. Then he says, because we thus judge that if one died for all, then we're all dead. The word constraineth or convinced turns the love of Christ, joins the love of Christ with the doctrine that follows. It means that to pass judgment and render a verdict. In other words, the love of Christ constrains us because this is what we judge. But also notice the result. Then we're all dead. He died because he died in Adam. In Romans chapter 5, verse 12, we read this way. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for all have sinned. And we start there in Genesis, a historical fact. Adam sinned. The Bible traces sin back to the Garden of Eden. God told Adam and Eve not to eat of the fruit of one particular tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But the serpent deceived Eve, who ate the fruit and then offered some to Adam, who, though he was not deceived, still ate of it. Through that deliberate choice, sin entered the world. Before that moment, Adam was a living soul in an immortal body. After that, he was a dead soul in a dying body. And of course, if we'd have been there and we'd have seen that, all we'd have seen was a man taking fruit from his wife and eating it. You probably wouldn't have seen anything different. There was probably no thunder, no music in the background, nothing. I mean, there was just... But that's, yet, at that one act of disobedience, disastrous result flowed through all across history. So what does that have to do with us today? It means that when Adam sinned, you and I sinned right with him. We are partakers of that sin. This is the doctrine of the original sin. When Adam sinned, you and I sinned. And when Adam fell, you and I fell. Because we are descendants of Adam, we suffer the consequences of what he did. We might even put it in another way. You know, if Adam drove the bus of humanity, when he drove off the cliff, humanity went with him. Or he might have been at the controls of the airplane that crashed into the mountain. Everybody else perished with him. But Paul makes the same argument that this verse, that he makes here in Romans 5. Through one man, Adam, sin entered the human race, but then also through one man, Christ, there is now life and hope and righteousness. Yes, we died in Adam, but then in Christ we are resurrected to a new life. We can live a new life. Christ died for all. If he died for one, he died for all. That means that his love reaches every person on the earth. He did not simply die as a moral example of sacrifice. That he is our example is true enough, but that doesn't exhaust the meaning of the cross. We can say he died to defeat death, which is true. But not even that comes to the heart of the matter. We will never understand the cross until we see that it was a substitution. I should have been on that cross. That cross was for you. But Jesus took our place. He substituted for us. One man died for another man. He died in my place. He died for me. And his death is personal. He died. His death is real. He died. And his death is sacrificial. He died for all. And his death is complete. He died for all. If that's not true, why think of his death at all? If he did not die in my place, if his death is only an example, then his death matters no more than any other death. Brother James talked about people dying, going to funerals and visitations and things. There's people dying all around us. But that is not anything in comparison to Christ's death on the cross, a substitution for you and I. But when we face our own sin and behold the evil within us, only then will we understand why it is necessary that the Lord laid on him the iniquity of us all. When you think about that, it's a pretty sobering moment. The death, in death, all of my sins, all of your sins, the sins of the entire world was upon him. Just thinking about even just my sins being on him is bad enough, let alone taking all the sins of the whole world on him. And he was willing to do that. That is love. Then going down to verse 15. And that he died for all, that they which live should not henceforth live unto themselves, but unto him which died for them and rose again. We all want to be loved. We all want to love and be loved. We were made to give and to receive love. But it's much harder to love others if we have never felt the power of love. That's one very important thing of children growing up and not coming from a Christian home, a home where love has been expressed. They have experienced it. It's hard for those children to grow up and learn to love. It can be done through Jesus Christ, but it's very difficult. And going to 1 John chapter 4, verses 16 through 21, it says, "And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. Therein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also." That's why true love is so beautiful when we find it. There is nothing nobler than for one person to tell another one, I love you. Those words, if uttered truthfully, can melt the hardest heart. In the cross of Christ, God says to the whole world, I love you. The cross stands in the center of our faith. So if we take away the cross, we discount the death of Christ, we take that cross away, we have no message to share. We have no hope to offer. No good news to proclaim to the world. Our message is exceedingly personal. Jesus did not die for a vast, unknown mass of humanity. He died for you. He died for me. Take away that truth and you reduce Christianity to just a set of moral instructions. And sad to say, that's what a lot of people are living on today. They're just trying to live a moral life and hope that at the end of life, the good that I have done will outweigh the bad. But that is not possible. It will not work. The gospel becomes good advice and nothing more. Only the death of Christ can bring us to the supreme sacrifice of life. He had to be the Son of God for his death to change us. He had to die to forgive us. And he had to rise to save us. A dead Christ saves no one. Only the empty tomb can guarantee our salvation. So I pray for the power of the cross to enter each one of our hearts. Our hearts by nature are hard, cold, and dark. But once the fire from Calvary touches us, those dead embers spring to life. And I pray that it happens to you. Only a transforming love can soften hard hearts. If we're left to ourselves, we will only be, we'll just be small and selfish, bitter and cold. There's just nothing there, really. We will never rid ourselves of what ails us. We need that fresh infusion of the love of Christ. Pray for that. Ask God to set you ablaze, to burn for him, Open your heart to the love of Christ. And only at the foot of the cross can we grasp the love of Christ for us. Just love changes everything. Totally changes everything. There once were some missionaries that sent an email to their pastor in which they wrestled with the question that a lot of people always ask. And it's a question of why. Why would you leave the U.S. and travel to Africa? Why would you not stay here and make money so you can send others? Why be so far from your parents and grandparents? Why not spend your best years on the other side? Why spend your best years on the other side of the world? Why take security risks? Why travel on unsafe roads? Why expose yourself to strange diseases? Why raise your children in a third world country? And these are not unusual questions. Many missionaries, I believe, struggle with those questions. But their answer was focused on this text. It is the love of Christ constraining us, compelling us. And to be constrained and to compelled in this way is a wonderful thing. Because the love of Christ, and that is what motivates people to do things that other people won't do. They went on and said that we are grateful for this bountiful blessing of God poured out into our lives, beginning with the blessing of this constraining love of Jesus. So again, it's not easy to be different from the crowd. The pressure is always on us to conform, to fit in, to go with the flow. The pressure's all around us. That's always a part of it. We need to fit in. We need to be part of the crowd. We don't need to stand out. We need to blend in. But some people feel differently about being different. The love of Christ compels missionaries to go to the ends of the earth. One gathers from their comments that they do not feel that they have given up anything. Or if they have, they have been more than repaid by the Lord. When Charles Simeon finished his sermon on this passage, he ended by calling on his listeners to answer the true end of all his love. Then he added these words, "Let the pleasures, the riches, the honors of the world be to you as the dirt under your feet. Be crucified to the world, and let the world be crucified unto you." All of the things in this world, let it mean nothing to you. Let it not find a place in your heart. But we also know that it's not easy to do as he says, because the honors of the world can be quite alluring at times. Only God's love shed abroad in our hearts will enable us to treat the bright lights of the world as dirt under our feet. Perhaps the words of a familiar chorus will help us. And it is, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace." Yes, indeed. Thank you for that. That is our hope and our prayer. It takes just a few moments to sing that song or those words. It is a work of a lifetime to bring them to reality. When Christ's love fills your heart, you will find joy in the darkest moments. Your faith will rise above your fear, and living for Christ will be a blessing, not a burden. Do you understand and believe that he died? When he died, Jesus died for you and you. You had a place in his heart when he hung on that cross. Again, he didn't die for a vast, unnamed mass of humanity. He died for you. He died for me. And when that love fills your heart, I believe we will gladly live for him. Just makes me think of animals. I think I've mentioned that before. Especially dogs. If a dog is caught in a trap or something like that, and you rescue him out of that, that dog will most times will be an adoration for you saving his life. He will be your friend because of what you have done for him. That's just a animal love, earthly love. But the love of Christ for what Christ did for us, if we truly understand what he went through for you and for me and personalize that, I think we will gladly sacrifice our life for him. And that includes a sacrificial relationship that we talked about in our Sunday school class with our partners. Let these words be our guide. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all, everything that I have. May God make that a reality in your heart and in mine today. Let us kneel to pray.